Our first candidate is Amanda Green. Amanda Green is head of talent acquisition operations for Delta Dental. She has lived in College Station for 15 years. Amanda Green received her Bachelor of Business Administration degree in management from the May School at Texas A&M. She's married to Keely Green, and they have two children, Morgan, who is 18, and Abby, 15. Our second candidate is Kyle Barrington. Kyle Barrington is CEO and principal investigator at Zions Corporation. He has lived in College Station for 18 years. Mr. Barrington received his Associates of Arts degree from San Jacinto College, Bachelor of Science degree from Texas A&M, Master's degree from the University of Houston, and his PhD from Capella University. Mr. Barrington is married to Beth, and they have three children, Sarah, 21, Catherine, 18, and Anna, 16. Thank you, Scott.
We'll begin with opening statements. First, the opening statement of Amanda Green.
Good evening. I want to thank the Chamber and all of the organizers for hosting this forum tonight. My name is Amanda Green, and I am running for place two on the College Station ISD School Board because of my true love for this district and what it has given to my family. My desire to serve in this capacity stems from my time volunteering in the classroom and district-wide committees. I want to serve to contribute to CSISD's continued success by representing all families in our district. During my 13 years volunteering in CSISD schools, I have served on the PTO at four campuses, from leadership to officer positions. I have served on the 2010 Long Range Planning Committee and subsequent rezoning committee. The breadth of volunteerism that I have produced from the classroom to critical committees within this district uniquely qualified me to understand the needs and the challenges that face this district. And my commitment to all of you is that I will always remember whom I serve: families, teachers, our broad, diverse community, and most importantly, our children. Thank you.
And now the opening comments of Kyle Barrington.
Howdy, my name is Kyle Barrington, and I guess this is what speed dating sounds like, a minute introduction. So let me try to do my best. On a personal side, as you already know, I got a great wife. I got three kids. Two of them graduated from Consol, and then I still have one who's a junior at Consol. On the professional side, graduated from A&M on a Saturday, started work on a Monday at Harris County Juvenile Probation, and since that point in time, I've worked with juveniles, both as well as runaway and homeless, and those in Head Start. During that time period, I got a chance to start the fifth charter school in the state of Texas back in the late 90s. I got a call from Oracle along the way, and I wound up working with them for about 5 years. During that time period, got a chance to work with school districts across this country, and also got a chance to understand a little bit more about the back end of databases, so I decided I would come back to College Station. Started here in 2000 and created my own company. We've been doing that now for 18 years, and we work with school districts, cities, states, and governments to help address the issues they have in their community. And I'm running for school board.
All right, we'll begin with you, Mr. Barrington. Clearly, most folks are aware of, the contentious situation that happened over the school rezoning. What do you think is the best way to pull our community together as we go forward?
Well, there's a couple of things that happened. We have obviously standard growth that has gone on in our community, but really what tore our community apart and what you think you're talking about is what happened in April and May of 2018. We had a new policy put into place, in which I think is an exceptional policy, which is to ensure that we have comparable student populations. I don't think it was implemented perfectly because it was a new policy. During that time period, we were requiring some of our eighth grade students who were eighth graders in April of 2018 with a path toward one school to actually wind up going to three different campuses in 3 years, and I think that's wrong. To address that issue, I think we need to change that policy. We simply need to sit back and say we need to bring back community input into the decision-making around any rezoning around FC Local. We need to make sure that we start that process earlier. Right now, the policy says December, and I think we need to move that to October. We need to also ensure that we have a limiting educational disruption clause that says no eighth grader or any student has to go to three campuses in 3 years unless they want to. And then finally, we need to make sure we have an exigent circumstance clause just in case we have a pipe that breaks and we need to make adjustments.
All right, I want to give you an opportunity to explain what FC Local is for just a minute so people may not know.
FC Local is the policy that was put in place to ensure that College Station school campuses have comparable student composition, particularly around socioeconomic status.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Green, you agree with that? That's an okay definition? Okay.
Yes.
All right, so same question for you. The contentious school rezoning, what do you think is the best way to pull the community together?
I think the best way to pull the community together and is really bringing us together. I think that from the community members that I've spoken with across the district, that there is a feeling of disconnect. We are an extremely large district, and a lot of our citizens don't even know that we are approaching 14,000 students coming to us from 74 different neighborhoods. I think that there are a couple of things that we can do to help bring the community together. First, ensure that before we ever go to redraw boundary zones, that we look at all strategic alternatives that we could utilize before we have to make that disruption in our community. Second, I believe that we need to have more equal representation across the district on our school board so that all voices feel heard, and that when decisions are made that impact certain communities over others, that I understand that it may not go their way, but they'll understand why the decision was made and that their voices were heard in response to that.
I'm going to give you a follow-up on that, then. How is it that they are not being represented now?
So currently, 71% of our school board lives in the east and south side of College Station. We have no representation on the west, on anywhere entirely in the northern part of our districts. There has been a large divide, especially that was pronounced by this last grandfathering and the numerous rezonings that have happened. I agree that rezoning is a challenge for any district that is in a high growth mode, as College Station is. I just think that we can do a better job by working with our city council, creating a more strategic plan when we look at rezoning, and looking at all alternatives before we go and redraw boundary lines.
You can't control where the people live who run for city council, for a school board.
No, you can't. But if you can, one of the ideas that I have that any growing district in Texas is looking at, and several have already switched to and are considering, is looking at the idea of going to a single member district. So today, all of our school board members are voted at large, meaning that they can live anywhere in our district, ideally, or they could come from one neighborhood. If we go to a more of a single member system that allows for equal representation, that would look like a mixture of five of our board members coming from different segments of our district, and then two at large, giving us a diverse, broad mix of representation across all communities.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Barrington, your reaction to that?
Well, there's a couple of reactions to that. The first one is when we talk about single member districts, just think about the logic of that. What you have now is everyone in this community who can vote has 100% voice and 100% say in who's on their school board. Right now, to next week or in 2 weeks when we vote, and then next year when we have three more board members up, we may have all four of those on the west side. That's fine, as long as everybody is interested in making sure every child is successful. What you get when you get single member districts is you tear your community apart. You no longer have seven individuals who are representing the best interests of the community. What you wind up with, even in this 4-5-2 split, five members who represent just their territory. And when you look at school districts, particularly growing school districts, you do not have success. Look at the bottom 10 school districts in the state of Texas. They're all single member districts. Houston is an example. And one of the solutions for Houston, go back to at large. Don't tear the community apart to put it back together.
You've got about 30 seconds if you have anything else.
Well, the other part about this, I think it's important to note, is there's two distinctions that we heard up here tonight. One of them is the FC Local policy. That only happened once, and that was last year, and that was May of 2018. We don't need the city to get involved in that. That is an equitable issue when we have overcrowding in one school campus and we have undercrowding in another, and trying to make sure that we have enough seats at one and not have too many open seats at another. But when we have growth, and we have growth like we've had in our community, we're going to have zoning because we have new school campuses. Fortunately, we're going to get a breather. We only open up one next year. After that, we kind of get to take a deep breath, and I think our community could really use it.
All right, I'll stay with you. What are your views of the recently implemented drug testing policy at CSISD high schools?
Well, that's an interesting one. When I graduated with my PhD, I got my dissertation published. The next day after it was published, the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy called me, and they were mad because my dissertation and the publication that I wrote was on randomized student drug testing and the effectiveness of it in the communities that I worked with. What we know is a couple of things. First and foremost, randomized student drug testing does not have an impact at all on student use. The issue for that is you don't test enough of them, and more importantly, kids get around it by doing this. When you have these drug testing, they're supposed to be random, and it's true, they're supposed to be, but the nurses usually have to get involved, and all of a sudden the nursing schedules get very limited on a day, so guess what they know is about to happen. Where we do know that the randomized student drug testing is effective is that it makes the community and it makes teachers and administrators feel like they're being proactive. And that makes them feel good. So one of the things that we really need to look at with randomized student testing is that the best value of where our dollar should go? I would recommend that we may consider wanting to put that into, psychological counseling for kids we know that truly have a problem.
Thank you. Comments of Kyle Barrington. Same question for you, Amanda Green.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I'm glad that you brought this question up. So drugs and alcohol are a definite concern in our schools. I would support any consideration of a policy that promotes safety and wellness. I know for a fact that this school board really wrestled with how do we answer the problem to the drugs in our schools today. I can tell you firsthand, I have two daughters, one that's currently in high school and one that just graduated. It's a very big issue. And I believe what the board tried to do when putting this policy in place is to put a deterrent. And did it go far enough? I wasn't sitting in that seat. I wasn't looking at that data. But what I can tell you, that any new policy that utilizes an expenditure that we are taking away from teachers or resources in the classroom definitely we need to evaluate its effectiveness at the one-year mark.
Thank you. Comments of Amanda Green. Put 30 seconds on the clock for me, please. Now, Ms. Green, I'll stay with you. How will poor students pay for referral treatment if they test positive? I'm sorry, you took a drink of water. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?
Sure. The question is, how will poor students pay for referral treatment if they test positive?
Right. So that was actually one of the questions that I had when this policy came out. And what I will tell you is that we do need to have, we should be implementing a more comprehensive policy. If someone does test positive, where do we send them? That is a big issue that faces our district. I will tell you that the funding comes to us from the Texas legislature. We are going to have to work very closely with our state representatives to understand the needs, and mental health services as well as drug and alcohol counseling needs to be addressed.
Kyle Barrington, same question for you.
Well, there's a couple of things that happen in that process. First and foremost, when you test positive under a randomized student drug testing piece, the school district is responsible for making sure that there's follow-up services. Part of that process falls up under their normal insurance pieces and falls up under an obligation of the school to ensure that if you identify a child, that you don't leave them without resource or without help. So that's the one thing that we talk about. What I would rather do is, instead of putting that money into randomized student drug testing, is go back to actually putting in a school health advisory committee that charges Medicaid so that we have those services available for kids we know who have that problem.
All right, I'll stay with you, Mr. Barrington. The upper superintendent and the central office, are they effective leaders as far as you're concerned?
Well, there are a couple of things that I look at when I look at leadership, and that's either across the country or when I'm dealing with my own children at this school campus. We have to first and foremost understand that the superintendent is a political animal. He has to make sure that there are four people on that school board that appreciate his services. After working with many school districts and many superintendents, one of the things that I would say that we need to work on with our current one is to make sure that he is an advocate and kind of is in some degree being able to chart a course for our district. What I see a lot of cases is that we have a lot of data, but it's not always well used. We have a significant problem in our district with the number of students who are failing to achieve academically, and those are particularly our children of color. And so one of the things that we have to do is continue to make sure that we focus on that. And I see some emphasis, but I don't see the benchmarks that I would expect to come from my superintendent. We had 700 new kids identified as at risk of educational failure in the last 2 years, yet I don't hear that being talked about. And I guarantee you, if I'm on the school board, we're going to be addressing those issues to ensure every child in this district gets a quality education.
Amanda Green, the same question for you.
Yes, I believe specifically that our superintendent and our leadership are doing an excellent job in our district. And I'll tell you why. They have implemented, they've gone above and beyond the state standards to make sure that our children and our district is evaluated with a community-based accountability program that is being watched and mirrored in other districts. We are one of the top districts in the state of Texas and definitely a premier public school option in this area. I think that they are doing an excellent job. I think that they hire excellent teachers. Are there always, is there always room for improvement? Absolutely. But that's why we have the school board, to help bring diverse ideas to our district, evaluate them, hold them accountable. But I will tell you, based on the community based accountability system that our district has put forth, based on the legislative priorities that I have seen our district vote on in the last school board meeting, they are doing an excellent job representing College Station ISD.
Amanda Green, I'll stay with you. When it comes to attendance zones, at what point should citizen input be a part of the equation?
So that's an excellent question, and I believe that citizen input is an extremely important part of attendance zone boundary drawing. One of the issues that I have heard from constituents in the district is that it's not consistent. So when we do have to go and redraw, they do put out maps for our parents to absorb, learn, ask questions. They may hold a forum, they may not. I believe that we need to bring in some consistency. So anytime we do make a decision that's going to impact where someone goes to school or a program, that we put that out to the community in a very specific time frame that is predictable. We hold forums at times that are convenient for our parents to attend. And anytime if there is a major redraw or consideration, that we put that back out to our community so that they have time to absorb it.
Comments of Amanda Green. Same question for you, Mr. Barrington.
You cannot have a school district that is going to rezone any child without parental input. It is that simple. So one of the things that we've already talked about is the revision of the FC local policy, and that would put in something we already do and something that is already known nationally to be effective, and that would be a campus-based committee. Just like we do with Head Start, and it's a requirement of some of the federal regulations because it's shown to impact parents and to get them involved in school and also into the school board, is to ensure that those campus committees are comprised of not teachers and not administrators, but actually voted on by members of each campus to have representation. That committee then would look over the individual concerns of that rezoning decision at the campus level. And if we need to do a boundary and zoning committee above that, we would elect members out of each of those individual campuses to make sure that every school has a voice. In our schools that have split, you would send two representatives from that campus so that there is never a situation in our community going forward absent an exigent circumstance where parental input is not available or accepted.
Give me 30 seconds on the clock again. I'll stay with you. Whenever you put in parents' levels, that says to me you don't think the school board is competent to be able to handle the information that's been given to them?
It's got nothing to do with competence. It's got to do with common sense. If I have a child, I don't need seven people who I don't personally know tell me where my child is going to go without at least giving me a chance to have that input at the campus level and build it up. Those forums, if you ever go back and look at the Eagle, I've been at them and I've talked at length at each one of them, but we have to have that understanding of what's happening in the campus and to the campus with each one of those individual boundary decisions. Then it should not be up to seven members to decide where my child goes without my voice.
Okay, Ms. Green, I'll get to you in a minute, but let's say that you have a campus committee and the campus committee says, we don't like this plan. Then what's the school board supposed to do?
You have 18. Next year, you're going to have 19 of those individual campuses. They're going to be able to represent those on the boundary zoning committees. You're not going to have everybody who is going to like it. But as one of the things we do know is that you want to add more voice when you're dealing with kids, children, and the impact that those decisions have on your family and where your child is going. It may not be always accepted, but the better communication between the community and the school board, the better the district will be. It is proven across this country and in our own community.
Thank you. All right. Now, Ms. Green, your opportunity.
So having actually served on a rezoning committee in CSISD, I can tell you that the school board and the superintendent do a very good job of setting the parameters when you walk in the door. You leave your bias behind, and if you can't, then you are not asked to serve. They give certain parameters on proximity, comparable composition, and all of the data. From that data, that is where the community-wide or a rezoning committee based with parents, teachers, principals, staff, all come together to look what's best for the district and make their recommendations. The school board doesn't have to listen to those recommendations. In all of the rezoning that I have either been a part of or have attended, they have, that have used that, those community input zoning committees, have utilized the recommendations made for, you know, from that committee.
Thank you. Comparable composition is a key factor of the district use and boundary adjustment and rezoning decisions. What changes, if any, would you make to the zoning linked to comparable composition? So in other words, the schools pretty much, school student bodies pretty much look alike. Start with you, Ms. Green.
Absolutely. So my focus would be on the students, understanding the students' needs and meeting them at their level to foster success. Comparable composition, as discussed in the context of boundary adjustments, has been primarily focused at the school level in our district. The goal being reduce the disparity across the schools and the numbers. Now, while I am 100% in support of comparable composition as a factor in rezoning, I'd like to see this taken to a deeper level to focus more directly on the economically disadvantaged students. What I'm hearing from many in the community as I walk the streets is that particularly those that are in the community that's defined as economically disadvantaged is that they would like greater engagement and less input, less assumptions or presumptions being made about their unique situation. While comparable composition, I will tell you, is important, understanding the barriers to student success is equally as important.
Thank you. Mr. Barrington, same question, comparable composition.
It is absolutely essential that in any community you have comparable compositions in your school campuses. If you go back through the history now, it's one of the things to keep in mind. This is the 100th year anniversary of the Chamber. It's also the 100th year anniversary in our state where we actually had compulsory education, but we're not even close to the number of times where we actually tried to educate every child. So when we go through this process, it is absolutely imperative that our campuses reflect the community that it serves, not the neighborhood it is closest to. FC Local is a policy that I adhere to because one of the things that we absolutely know in our nation and in our state is that the diversity in our campus makes every student better. It makes them better socially, emotionally, and academically. But I would even put across and put aside every single research article that tells you that's the way to go and say it is a moral imperative of this community to do it. And if we do not do that for each and every one of our campuses, then shame on us.
Mr. Barrington, you have a question for Amanda Green.
Yes. When you first started your campaign, you indicated that you were going to, as a trustee, committed to pushing for single-member districts. Now it seems like that's changed to dialogue about single-member districts. Why didn't you start with dialogue?
Well, I'll tell you. So anytime we are not currently serving, right, on the school board, right? So when we put forth policies, just like your five edits to FC Local, you can't push for that and it immediately happen. You have to start with a dialogue. I wanted to start the conversation. It's scary to think about change when we have been doing things one way the whole time. But as we look and at a growing district, it is important to look at diverse points and consider things like single member districts. Yes, I want to push for the conversation. I am one person. I am 1/7 of the board. I want to work with our school board to look at different ways that we can minimize the feeling of disconnection that a lot of our families and our students are feeling.
Ms. Green, you have a question?
My question would be, what programs would you advocate for in the district that we don't currently have?
Oh, there's a couple of them. First and foremost, we have Reconnecting Youth out there. One of the things that we talked about and we heard quite a bit in the previous forum up here with our county commissioner was about school safety. And one of the things that we know around school safety is that you can have all the mechanics and all the police officers and security in the campus, and that doesn't keep it safe. One of the things that Red Lake taught us, and one of the things that I do with school safety across this country, is talk about the different issues and some of those solutions. In Red Lake, we had a person show up with a gun. He came into a side door. It was locked. A security officer met him there from the inside and pointed him to the front. That individual then went to the next door, tried it, didn't work. Security guard pointed him to the front. When he got to the front, there was a metal detector with another security guard. He pulled out his gun and started shooting. The issue at this point in time is security alone doesn't stop what we talk about in regards to school safety. We know these issues are related to disconnected kids. And we can connect them back to the school. We connect them back to the school through evidence-based programs that we know are effective and that are implemented nationwide. RY is one of them, Reconnecting Youth. The other is CAST.
Time now for our closing comments, and we'll start with you, Mr. Barrington.
We are blessed to live in this community, number one, because we have people who actually show up to these events. And so I appreciate everybody in this audience and everybody listening at home. But it is also important to know that the legacy of our school district is what brought us here, and it's also our community. We wanted to be here because people before us came here and set an example of what a community can look like. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't each all and every one of us have a way of looking and seeing the vision of our community being better than what it is. And as we go through these next several years, one of the things that we know is we're going to continue to grow, and those opportunities for growth are going to create challenges within our community. So one of the things that we need to make sure that we do is bring back the idea that every voice in our community is vital and needs to be heard. It may delay our processes slightly, but at the end of the day, it's going to make us a stronger community. We need to make sure that we focus on the kids that are struggling and make sure that they have the resources. We need to make sure we pay our teachers comparable and make sure it's competitive and make sure we can attract good teachers. And then we need to make sure we're good stewards of our taxpayers' money. I'm running for school board, and I appreciate it.
Closing comments now of Amanda Green.
Thank you. I want to thank the Chamber again for hosting this forum tonight. If elected, I will propose a more effective communication strategy between the board, parents, educators, and students. We have almost 14,000 students in our district and 7 school board members to represent all of them. I will work for all families to be equally represented and their voices be heard. I will push for proactive, long-term solutions regarding boundary adjustments to avoid redrawing lines every few years. I also want to share with you that throughout the process, I have often thought about my grandfather, who also ran for school board in Waco in 1956 on the platform of integration. That was a very unpopular platform in 1956. He received death threats from the KKK, threatening himself, my father, who was 12 at the time, and my grandmother. My grandfather never gave up because he knew that segregation was not right, and he was called to stand up for those who couldn't represent themselves.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Ms. Green. These are your candidates tonight for the College Station School Board Trustee Place 2. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.